Welcome to the Before Midnight podcast, coming to you from the N Plus One studios overlooking beautiful downtown Frankfurt. In this podcast, we explore the world of endurance multi-sport. If it has to do with swimming, biking, running, or any combination of the three, we're there. This week, we're just going to talk about a whole lot of random things going on in the world right now. A lot has to do with sports. A lot has to just do with what's going on in life. I'm your host tonight, Linda Word, along with my co-host, Brian Schenkenfelder. How are you today, Brian?
I am phenomenal. Phenomenally messed up.
You know, you're not alone there. You're just not alone.
No, this is, it's, now that we've gotten into the meat of this, this is, yeah, it's quite the change, at least for me. I have always been one to work from home anyway, but now with the addition of school being closed, our school decided to keep working, unlike some of the public schools. I mean, supposedly they're having class. I'm waiting to see how it is. We were talking to one of Alex's friends who's in the public school system, and he was very bored last week.
Oh.
Us, on the other hand, have been very, very busy. We get assignments every day, and it's been, we've been going from about 9 to 3, 9 to 4, 9 to, now it's starting to drag out to about 9 to 5. Alex is taking more breaks during the day. Now that he's home, he knows he can take more breaks, and that slowed down the amount of stuff we can cover from 9 to 3. Because I was trying to hope to get us in 9 to 3, try to stay somewhat focused. And, you know, it's Montessori school, so there's this whole, he can kind of pick whatever he wants, and I've been letting him do that.
Yeah.
That kind of leads to interesting
results,
too. Now, you're
his teacher. There's like a call-in almost every day, aren't they doing?
Yeah,
like
they do a
Zoom
circle
meeting?
Thing.
Okay.
Where, and that's a complete waste of time, but that's okay.
Yeah, it gives the kids a chance to see each other, sort of.
Alex is like, he's done with it like 3 minutes into the call. You can tell he wants zero part of that call.
Is he like that during school, I wonder? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, he really doesn't want to. Occasionally he'll try to pipe in, but generally he's like, eh. He's not interested in like it being a social event. He's just there to do the work and move on. Yeah. He's almost like, eh, it's a business. This is something I have to do. Because like today they went to like the last 5 or 10 minutes. A couple of them were like, oh, we want to have this social thing that they wanted to have like a second call that's just a social call.
Gotcha.
And she was going to do reflections, and then she decided, she changed her mind. It's like, oh, we'll just do social like the last 5 minutes. So as soon as she started going into like a social, Alex like hung up. He was ready to move on.
Oh, that's too funny.
He wants no part of the social.
Wow. Because
there's no real interaction. Really, basically what she did was just let him go one at a time, kind of tell what they did. He wants the interaction with the kid. He wants to play, roll around, wrestle.
Right.
The things kids do. And without that, it's not interesting for him.
Yeah. Now, I know one of the preschool teachers did her first Zoom meeting with, she's got 16 kids in her class. I think she had 10 of them. We were kind of, a group of teachers were sort of in a text chat this morning, and she said it was, you know, it was just like being at school. The kids that couldn't sit still were like gone. You know, we're talking 3, 4, 5 year olds, you know, young kids. And she said the funniest one was like the little kid that always takes off during circle and watching the dad chase after him all over the living room. It's like, it was too funny. It's like, I can just picture that. So group chats don't work so good with 4 year olds, but they're doing a lot of one-on-one time though. She's like scheduling with her students to FaceTime her at whatever time her and her assistant are getting to do that. And I'm doing a little bit of that with some of the kids. I don't really have a class. I do the extended day, but just I'm doing stories on Facebook just so that the kids see, you know, see me again and get a lot of, you know, a lot of feedback. And some of the kids have kind of messaged me separately, so it's just a whole different ball game.
Unfortunately, I'm in the age group that gets screwed in all of this.
Your child is, or you?
Me, because he's not capable of doing all of this on his own.
Yeah.
You know, he can go online, he can throw through and click on it, but he likes to hurry, so he's not going to read the instructions. He's not going to do all the things that are probably necessary for the project. So I have to, it's been my role in all this, because my wife, who's working at home as well, is actually working during the day. I have a little more flexibility with my time. So I have taken over the role of guiding this process. And it's been from 9 to 3 every day. I'm there and I have very little time to do outside work. Occasionally I do. Sometimes I use it to just take a mini nap. The breaks. Because what I've done is I've decided to just get up at 4 a.m., work for 4 hours in the morning,
yeah.
Then pick up and go from 9 to 3 and in the evening do my workouts. And if there's any time, help out around the house, play with Alex or... I'm just not even doing work in the evening. For me, it's mostly just been either play or do some work or work out, go to bed, whatever it is. That's my new routine.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to use the weekends as my catch-up for work. And I'm kind of curious to how long I can do that before I completely
Hopefully,
burn out.
until May?
Yeah. I mean, if they don't do school, that's going to be a long two months.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, spring break's going to be bad enough because what the hell are we going to do over spring break?
Yeah.
In theory, we could go to the parks, but I don't know if the pools are going to be open, like the indoor pools are going to be open at any of the state parks or anything.
I don't know. But, I mean, you could go camping, but...
They'll be apparently all the...
Oh, that's true. Some of the parks are closed because they're trying to keep people from congregating.
Yeah, I don't know if they're actually closing the parks. According to my wife, she was looking around, is that all the state parks were open.
Okay.
And well, you could stay at the... In whatever there.
I've seen a lot of people, you know, just on Facebook that have their campers ready to go. You know, that's what they're going to do and go to campgrounds.
But, so. I mean, how much are you going to do in a campground? I mean, my son would be bored to tears after about a day or two of that. Without like a swimming pool, you know, you can't go out to like putt-putt or anything like that. Yeah, that's all going to be closed in this state.
Yeah.
I guess we could go down to Tennessee. I wonder if like Gatlinburg's still open.
I don't know.
Because Tennessee hasn't locked down
yet.
Hey,
I'm supposed to go to Puerto Rico. I've got a week and a half. Oh, I'm hoping. Plane's going to be empty. That's for sure. Well, before we get too much into this, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, 3 Sport Endurance Coaching. 3SE works with athletes of all ages, abilities, and aspirations. Single and multi-sport athletes of all distances, 5K runners, sprint triathletes, to Ironman, and 100-mile trail runners. We're competitors ourselves with real lives, real families, and getting through all of this with everybody else. So we understand trying to fit it all in, along with homeschooling. We train athletes to reach their goals and go beyond the next PR to become the more confident and skilled at their chosen sport. If you're looking for a coach, check us out at Go3Sport. So yeah, working from home, trying to fit everything in. It's sort of the new normal for everybody, at least in the state of Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be a shock to people who've never worked at home before. And maybe we should talk a few minutes about working at home and things you can do. I've worked from home for so long, a lot of this advice we might give here is probably not applicable to me anymore.
Might be to me.
But for
I'm
people
like...
who are new to this whole concept of working from home, it can be a shock.
Yeah. I mean, the challenges that I'm finding is there's so much other stuff to do in my house. It's like going to work gets me away from doing other work, you know. Trying to manage what I'm doing at the house is very, very difficult for me. I'm finding that.
The problem is that people do certain things at home. They've conditioned themselves that when I'm home, I'm either watching TV, maybe making some food, eating dinner, cleaning up, doing laundry. When they're home, those are the things they think to do, and those are the things that gather their attention, read Facebook or whatever they might do. And when you wake up in the morning and aren't going to work, it's a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Now every day feels like a weekend.
Right.
You have to break through that mentality and generate new routines that you can try to habitualize. And that's really, I think, the key to this is trying to come up with a routine you can get into to get yourself in the mindset of working and getting on task and letting some of these other things go to the side and treating it like a work day.
So, I mean, do you do a schedule or?
I think for people getting started, it might be a good idea. I've heard people say, hey, the best thing you can do is get up and get dressed like you're going to work. And work like that, just to have a routine that this is not a weekend. This is something different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been doing it for so long, I I'm going to work regardless of what I'm wearing. I could walk around the house naked and I'd still get work done.
Ew. Granted, I've seen a whole lot of memes that are like, you may want to put on real pants like at least once a week to make sure they still fit. You get used to wearing sweats all the time. Like, oh.
But for people who are not by nature highly disciplined, you've got to start creating a routine to generate some discipline so that you can at least get some work done. The big thing is trying to get up and utilize those first probably 4 hours of the day.
Mm-hmm.
One of the real huge benefits from working at home is the fact that you don't have the disturbances you have at the office. Most people, they go to the office, they sit down, I'm here, let me check social media, let me check my email. Oh, look, Bob just came in, let me go talk to him for 15 minutes. And most people spend a big chunk of their day socializing in a workforce because that's, in an office environment, that's the way it works. Someone's going to eventually get up, they're tired, they start walking around, they find someone to talk to. And you're going to have interruptions throughout the day based on that. Or someone comes to you with a problem and then they spend another 15 minutes talking about whatever the issue of the day is.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes kind of a distractor and really creates a difficulty in the workplace of trying to get solid work done. But at home, you're not going to have a lot of those distractions. You can turn email off. You can turn messaging off. And especially those first 3 or 4 hours of the day, and focus on work, you'll probably get all your work done that you would normally get in a day in those 3 or 4 hours, which would then allow you to either do more later, maybe socialize, answer all those emails, do a lot of those other things on the second half of the day, especially if you're getting tired as the day yeah. goes on. And once you get that routine and once you start executing like that on a day-to-day basis, then you can start allowing yourself the freedom to go out and do other things in the middle of the day. Like anymore, I have no problem going out for a bike ride at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If I know there's nothing going on, I'll go out and ride for an hour or two in the afternoon, come back and start working again. You can begin to do that. The danger of doing that before you get into the habit of working and remotely and not getting distracted by the television or video games or Facebook, once you get in the habit of just working in an environment at home, then you can start integrating in activities that would be kind of a no-no in a more structured environment.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I guess my schedule has been for, you know, over a year now where I don't actually go into the workplace until about 10:30 or 11. I've got a whole lot of flexibility in the morning to do a bunch of other business stuff that's not related to that job. And do, you know, all the training and everything else and laundry. But I will actually, you know, I might have 4 hours and I'll actually schedule out, okay, putting in the laundry, you know, and how much time do I have before. So I switch gears a lot. A lot of that ADD personality comes out in the morning.
Well, I mean, a lot of it is what works for you. I mean, what is going to get you into the work mentality versus play mentality of being at home? Because so many people, home is the equivalent of play.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get away from this is play time to this is work time. Now, my problem has become finding play time among all the work time.
Well, and I get that too. I mean, when I'm at home, you know, there's just so much stuff that always has to be done because I'm taking care of a house, you know, 4 people live in it. Just having so many other things to do that sort of fit in and just trying to get it all done. I find that at home I have more work to do. It's like getting to another place is actually a relief. If I go home, it's like, oh my God, there's a list of so many things to do. So trying to work in that place and have all my home stuff to do, it just gets to be too much for me sometimes.
You have to separate it out.
Yeah.
Now, the downside to working at home, and this isn't a problem for me because I'm okay with isolation, is the isolation associated with working at home. Now, someone like yourself, Linda, probably struggles mightily with that.
I have been in HE double hockey sticks since this started. It's like, yeah, those memes where, you know, introverts help your extrovert friends. Yep, that's me.
I'm used to going out for 3 or 4 hour bike rides by myself. So working at home by myself is really not a big deal.
No, hour tops on my own on a bike. No. If I'm going out longer than that, somebody better be with me.
So, yeah, I'm used to long stretches of time by myself. Working at home is not an issue from that standpoint. Yeah. But when you're forced to work from home in a situation like we're in today, that becomes a real challenge for the extroverts. And that's where the video conferencing stuff is something you probably should look into, and finding your other extrovert friends and doing video conferencing. That's, from what I can tell, been pretty successful with extroverts.
We had a meeting today with several coworkers, and preschool teachers are maybe not the best when it comes to a lot of technology. So there were quite a few hiccups, but we got through it, and we did much better than I don't know if anybody's seen the clip on Facebook. It's been going around about the poor girl who didn't understand how that all worked, and
that's pretty funny.
Didn't know her
carried her phone right into the bathroom, dropped trowel right in there in front of the camera, and sat down and turned the camera off.
There were like 9 people on that call. One dude, and he was like, "I didn't see anything." All of a sudden, I guess the moderator didn't realize what was going on. Yes. She's like, "What happened?"
She was talking about something and not paying attention to the screen.
Oh my God, I was howling, mainly because that could have very easily been me.
Well, that was one of the suggestions I'd heard out there. When you're working at home, always put on pants.
Yeah, this is why.
In case you get stuck in a conference call online and you don't get up and... I'm used to working at home, so it wouldn't be a problem for me. I wouldn't get up in that situation. Yeah. I know there's a camera there.
Yeah.
But if you're new to it, you're not used to having a camera there, and you just kind of do your thing and don't realize that, oh, I'm being projected out to everybody. But for the extroverts out there, you get to see people. It's much closer to real interaction than, say, a phone call, because phone calls are terribly boring.
Yeah,
and it's not quite the same.
You can't read people nearly as well in a phone call, and it just makes things, I don't know. I do pretty well on phone calls, but not with people that don't do well on phone calls. So
right.
I have a lot of introvert friends and a very introverted sister, so it's like, I just don't even call.
Yeah.
Other people I can talk to for 2 hours.
No, we're living in a rough time, and it's not any easier for the athletes out there.
No.
We're looking at the Olympics. Are they decided to postpone it? I heard the news today
that they have postponed till 2021.
That's wild. I mean, that's not even until July.
Yeah.
We were talking about this beforehand. The only thing that really makes any sense whatsoever is some of the groups might have difficulty training right now.
There's a lot of reasons why I can see that they're doing it. But that, to me, is the biggest one that, there's some... We're in America. I mean, if you're an Olympic athlete, you're going to be able to train. But other countries just may not have the same resources that we do to get athletes to pools or have the teams, sequestered, together, quarantined together or something. I don't know.
What's wild about it is how many people are getting screwed by this.
Yeah.
All of your endurance athletes, swimmers and such, they're on like a 3 and 4 year cycle of development.
Right.
And now they have peaked this year. Trying to come back next year and replicate that is going to be very, very, very difficult.
Yeah. No, it's going to be very challenging for the athletes, the coaches trying to figure it out.
I wouldn't be surprised, especially in some of your endurance sports and sports that have like a build-up training like swimming, if you don't see some young phenoms come out of nowhere and win some events next year. The ones that haven't been training that might have been too young for the Olympics and really weren't targeting this Olympic cycle. Mm-hmm. But now that you're a year later, maybe you can target it. You're old enough. You're kind of on the young range, but you're now old enough. You're thinking about like a marathon. If you're like 22, now all of a sudden you're 23, you're getting into that prime marathon age.
Right.
Before you were a little younger, but now you're in it. You're not on that 4 year cycle. Marathoners probably aren't on this as much as other athletes like swimmers.
Yeah.
You might have been a 17 year old swimmer, 17, 18. You might have been a little too young to really peak for this Olympics. But next year, you're that 18, 19 range. You can probably put together a training plan that's going to and make a bigger leap than some of these other guys who have been targeting this year. It's going to be really interesting.
It is. I mean, and I think of people like gymnasts. you know, I mean, it's sort of that same
category. Oh yeah, gymnasts are screwed. I mean, if you were at the high end of the age, sorry.
Yeah.
You're SOL. You're like all the collegiate athletes that got screwed.
The other thing, I mean, I don't know logistically, I don't know how they're doing this. Are people going to have to requalify for the Olympics?
I would assume so.
Or if you were in for this year, do you automatically get to go next year? Are they going to have, you know, all new Olympic trials?
You'd have to.
Yeah.
Fortunately, most Olympic trials haven't occurred yet. Most of them were in June and July.
Okay. I mean, marathon's done quite a few of the track. Isn't track and field?
Track and field wasn't until like June either.
Okay.
The most of track and field, most of the swimming, most of it was in June.
Okay.
Because most of it's in that build up to the, you're trying to get people as they're coming up to their peak, mm-hmm. which means they're in top shape, but they haven't really peaked for the Olympics. That's when you want to pull in your best athletes.
So the marathon's earlier so that people get a chance to recover. Yeah.
The marathon's earlier because you need a month to recover from it.
Right.
Legitimately.
Yeah.
Before you can start training again seriously. They need a longer recovery time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so fortunately for that, you haven't, because that would be a disaster if you have all these people qualify and you wait a year. Because I might be on form this year. Next year, I might suck.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. I get injured. Yeah. I get hurt. Whatever it might be. Let's say I get hurt and I'm out 7 months with a broken leg or whatever it might be. Two broken legs in a car wreck.
I mean, that can happen at any time.
Right. But if I'm... There's a difference between having a one-month period where this can happen and a 13 or 14-month period where this could happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's much more likely to happen in that bigger window than the smaller time window.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. We'll have to kind of keep up on that. I mean, that was just announced this morning, or not even this morning. I think it was this afternoon that I saw it.
I know all the spring marathons pretty much got screwed.
Yeah. Boston's taking place Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
September of this year. So I'm trying to figure out, okay, how are they doing the qualifying for 2021?
Right.
Because normally that's mid-September that you have to qualify for the next year. So, and like a lot of people qualify for Boston at Boston for the next year. And so that window is going to be
a little more interesting.
A little more interesting, yeah. Yeah, because they're not going to have, so it's like if they don't qualify in Boston,
I mean, you're
then,
you're,
they, don't have, then they have no time.
Yeah,
to
you're
qualify.
Not going to get two chances to qualify. You get one shot.
Yeah,
it's going to be in the fall.
One shot. Yeah.
Whenever you're going to do it in the fall, that's your shot.
Yeah.
You don't get a spring and fall shot for it.
Yeah.
The other interesting sport in all this is cycling.
Yeah, that's right.
The Tour de France is in July.
Okay.
As of now, they've never said anything about it. The tour people themselves are like, if we cancel, it's not the end of the world for us. The problem isn't the Tour de France. The problem is all the cycling teams. The race that gets all the viewership is the Tour de France.
Right.
That's the one that generates the payroll for all these teams.
Mm-hmm.
Professional cycling, if they don't do the Tour de France, could easily collapse.
Yikes.
In which case, I don't know what happens. You basically don't have teams.
So there's three
big, or at least teams that aren't get paid.
There's three big events, correct?
They have three Grand Tour events that are multi-week races. And you have the Spring Classics. They've already canceled the Spring Classics, which has screwed a number of teams.
Okay.
Quickstep is one of them. Quickstep was the kind of the revelation in the last tour where they had Philippe, who went late in the tour before he lost the yellow jersey.
That's right, yep.
They weren't expected to win, but they dominate the classics. They've lost all those classics because they're gone.
Oh, wow.
The Paris-Roubaix and the other spring one-day classics have all been canceled.
Wow.
They've already taken a hit from that. That's their big season, and that's mostly a European season. Belgium, and they love the Spring Classics over in Europe. In the U.S., some people follow it. Really, most of the world follows the Tour de France. That's the one cycling event that people around the world follow.
Right.
The Europeans love cycling a lot more than us. If you go to BBC Sports website, cycling is one of their major tabs. You won't find cycling on ESPN.com unless you kind of bury down into Olympic sports or more or other or whatever else. It's always interesting to go to like BBC.com because it's their sports page, because soccer's obviously the biggest thing they cover, being England, and the Premier League being the biggest soccer league in the world. But you also have things like Formula One racing is one of their big sports over there.
My dad loved to watch one.
Yeah, it's Talk it's more popular than NASCAR is here.
Talk and about NASCAR closing down popular. Some roads. Oh my yes. gosh. That's when we got a VCR, actually. There was a Formula One race in Adelaide, South Australia, and my dad wanted to record it. That's when we finally got a VCR in my house. I'm sorry, childhood memories. But yeah.
The things like cricket show up on mm-hmm. their main page. But cycling is one of the major tabs in European sports. And cycling is very big as a sport. In Europe, more people cycle in Europe. It's a community that, because it's a small countries, a lot of urban areas, cycling is a much bigger form of transportation. Yeah, plus, they don't really have cars that are worth a dang over there. And
except Formula One cars.
Have you ever been to Europe and seen gotten a car over there? There are all these little cars that are like barely fit two people in them, and they have about as much power as a lawnmower.
Well, it's because they're not going as far. I mean,
right. I mean, that's a lot of it. And they don't have the big parking spaces we do.
Yeah.
So everything has to be tiny to be able to fit everybody in.
You're not going to be driving around in Suburbans and Expeditions.
Because the first time I saw a smart car was over in Europe.
Yeah.
And there were a ton of them over there.
Well, yeah.
Of cars that size and stuff. And that's just such a foreign concept to have something like that here. And so out of character for America.
America. But then you go to Germany and get good cars there.
They do, but they don't necessarily drive them there. Some people do.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the sports cars, but generally most of the Volkswagens and are real tiny cars over there mm-hmm. that they sell. It's a different market. It's interesting. But yeah, I mean.
So yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with the tour.
Yeah.
I mean July.
It's interesting. It's interesting to see how this affects your minor sports. The NBA, the NFL, the NHL probably survive not having a season without too much pain. But how does MLS soccer survive?
I don't even know what that is.
Major League Soccer in the U.S. Because it's their season right now. The European soccer's out right now. I mean, that's a huge moneymaker for a lot of those teams. And they're starting to pay their players a ton of money.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that we have a triathlon season at all. I mean, nationals are in August, so
yeah,
hopefully that'll happen. But
yeah, I mean, hopefully we'll race in June.
Yeah,
at some point we're going to have to. At some point, this is something I've been. I'm weird. I think about a lot of things that are outside of the norm, and we have to start looking at the cost analysis of the Wuhan virus. Here's an example of cost analysis. We have 40,000 deaths every year in car wrecks, which is about 3,100 a month. That's a lot of deaths when you think about it. We could easily solve that problem. If we enforced a 25-mile-per-hour speed limit, how many deaths do you think we'd have in a year?
I don't know, but a whole lot less.
It would be in the single digits, probably. Because what kills is not the cars, it's speed differentials that kill. So the faster we go, the more likely we are to die. Because speed doesn't kill, because otherwise we'd get in an airplane, we'd all die in an airplane. Where you die in an airplane crash is when you go from 600 miles an hour to zero. Quickly. Same thing's true of a car. When you go from 70 to zero quickly, bad things generally happen to the insides of your body.
Yeah, and outside, yeah.
The question is why do we allow those 40,000 deaths to occur when we could set a speed limit of like 25 miles per hour? Well, we make a trade-off. We're better off being able to travel and get someplace quicker doing 75 or 80. It's mm-hmm. a cost analysis. And we're okay with 40,000 deaths a year to be able to travel more freely and more quickly to get from point A to point B. It's a trade-off. It's a cost analysis. At some point, we're going to have to do this with the Wuhan virus as well. You know, if you're talking about closing down until May and July, we're talking, what, 3 months? 3 or 4 months? Now you got to start thinking about how businesses operate. You have things, this is, you know, people look at a business like, oh, that's a $100 million company. Well, yeah, but most of that $100 million are in fixed assets that can't be turned into cash. They're buildings, they're machines to operate the factory. Mm-hmm. I can't sell my building to generate cash on a whim. They can't do it. Most companies, a company in good standing is going to have 3 months of liquidity, 3 months of cash on hand generally is roughly where you're going to be if you're a company in good standing. And what that means is if you go out of business and do no more sales, you can do business for 3 months and pay all your bills and not have to shut off the lights. Companies generally don't carry more than that, because once you start building more cash than that, then you should be doing something with it. Right. You should be investing in something, or you should be giving back to your shareholders, mm-hmm. right? So companies only have 3 months, 4 months cash on hand. If we shut down business, which to some extent we are, I mean, I was talking to one of my salesman friends, and he's like, what are we going to do? We can't go out and meet with customers with all this social distancing stuff. No one's going to want to meet with us. Well, that means sales are drying up is what that tells me for a lot of companies. Well, now if I'm only doing half the business I was doing before, well, in 3 or 4 months, my cash is going to start running out, which means I got to start hoarding my liquidity because, you know, I can't sell my assets easily. So how do I hoard cash? Well, I let go of people, which is going to create huge levels of unemployment. Now, if you're a business that's already struggling, what are the chances you have 3 months cash on hand?
Yeah, pretty slim.
Pretty slim. How many companies are probably in that category?
Yeah.
25, 30% maybe?
I have no idea.
That might be conservative, having been in business. It's hard to carry that much cash on hand unless you're doing fairly well. If we're closed for 3 months, you could lose 20-30% of the businesses out there.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, you're looking at unemployment numbers of 30-35%. At the peak of the depression was 24% unemployment. Now the problem is that because you hear a lot of people like, oh, you know, everybody's talking about flattening the curve, and I get it. There's a lot of fear around this virus. There's a lot of unknowns. The data hasn't stabilized yet. We don't really know what the outcome is going to be. So I can understand some of the fear and wanting to flatten the curve.
Yeah. We don't want to overwhelm our healthcare system. Right. And then, you know, you get in a car wreck and not be able to.
But this is where the cost analysis comes in. Because if we go that route all out and that's all we care about, and we go to 30-40% unemployment, there is no quick bounce back from 30% unemployment. We're talking about a decade. And there's a lot of reasons for this. Okay, we come out of it. There's huge unemployment. Companies who start selling again, it takes 2-3 months to fill up pipelines of all their sales that have dried up. So they're going to continue to hoard cash. They're not going to, and then once they kind of get up and running again, they're probably still not going to be quick to invest, because either they're trying to recover back their cash they lost and build that nest egg back up so that they can begin to expand. So businesses aren't going to come out and immediately expand and are immediately going to hire people. So that's going to take a while for that to begin to move forward. Well, what else can you do? Well, the government could potentially get involved and give a bunch of these unemployed money. But where does that money come from? Well, it comes from the people who are paying the taxes. And now all of a sudden you have a much smaller tax base you're pulling from too, because you have huge unemployment. So they don't have as much money coming in to give out. Mm-hmm. What's the other option? We print money and give it away?
That doesn't work very well.
Well, that runs into problems too. I mean, you end up like Zimbabwe did a decade ago, or Venezuela now is probably a better. But Zimbabwe was crazy. Once you start printing money, you end up in inflation. Zimbabwe's inflation got to such a point that stores had to close at lunch to adjust their prices.
Oh, good God. I mean, the whole thing, you think about it a whole lot more than I do. I don't make any of the decisions.
There's nothing I can do about it.
There's nothing we can do about it. I mean, there's going to be a lot of businesses that are not going to survive, obviously.
But you know,
I'm hoping that new industries, though, are going to make it.
But where are the industries going to come from? Because there's no capital. The people with capital are going to hoard it because they don't know what that's uncertainty standpoint. And you end up with too many people in the wagon, not enough people pulling the wagon, and the wagon doesn't move very fast in that scenario. that's why it takes a long time for things to recover.
Yeah.
I mean, but we need to start thinking about an economic depression of that level if we want to flatten the curve for 4 or 5 months. Because that's what's going to happen. Because there's just, everybody thinks these companies have people don't think about how companies operate, and I get that because a lot of people don't operate companies. They just kind of work for them. Well, it's a $100 million company. They're not going to run out of money. But that's not how companies operate. They don't really carry that much liquidity
right. At
one point in time. And so when I start hearing 3 and 4 months, I'm like, holy God, that's a real problem
economically.
And, you know, people just need to start thinking about that. And it's like, okay, at some point we're going to have to go, okay, we're going to have to take a sustainable amount of potential increase in deaths to keep the economy from utterly collapsing.
Yeah.
Because if you collapse, I mean, what's the quality of life with 20-30% unemployment?
Yeah.
Is your healthcare going to get better in that type of environment?
Yeah.
You know, I know there's been like studies of like factory layoffs where your increase in drug usage goes way up. There's a lot of ill effects to an economic collapse. And at some point we're going to have to have that discussion before it gets too late. Because the problem is businesses still have sales right now.
I'm glad you're 6 feet awake while you're coughing, by the way.
Well, that's from talking without enough water.
Yeah.
It's really what that is. My throat's starting to dry out from talking.
I'm still 6 feet away.
The problem is I'm drinking bourbon.
Yeah.
And that's a little dehydrating. And between that and trying to talk for 45 minutes, that's has dried out the throat a little bit.
Yeah.
That's just kind of an interesting side note on this from my standpoint of as a businessman and as I look forward to this, because you know coaching is part of my business as well. If we end up with high unemployment, how many people are going to want coaches?
How many people are going to be racing? You know,
how many people are going to be racing?
People aren't going to have that.
How many race
income?
Directors are going to go out of business in that type of scenario?
Yeah,
you know, I know because they basically have missed the running part of the season.
Yeah,
you,
the spring part.
You have the tri-season in the summer, and then you're going to have fall marathons.
Mm-hmm.
Can a timing company survive with as much revenue as they're going to lose?
Yeah, I mean, because they don't time in the wintertime, so basically they're losing, you know, a third.
Of their season,
yeah. Yep.
I mean, are they going to survive?
Yeah.
Maybe we need to start a timing company.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's a business I want to get into either.
Yeah.
Although I'd be good at it.
Yeah, that's...
Because it's data.
Every weekend.
That would be every weekend.
It's a tough job. I appreciate all our timers the more and more I get into this. It's like, whoa, all right.
No, but that would be something I'd probably be good at, though, because it's just data.
Well, there you go.
I'm good at managing data, and I could probably get it turned around and posted a lot faster than most of these race companies do.
Watch out, everyone.
But fortunately, I don't have a huge burning desire to get into timing races.
Phew. Thank goodness. No, I mean, there's just so many different parts that we don't know what's going to happen. And hopefully the powers that be are going to make some good decisions for us. It'll save people's lives and hopefully people's jobs.
I mean, at the end of the day, there's nothing...
all the children that are being homeschooled will survive and so will their parents.
There's nothing we can do about it. The not having school is going to be rough if we don't reopen again this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be tough for a lot of families. I think about a lot of families that, you know, don't get along as it is, and now they're all confined together. So,
well, I mean, then there's the question of, are we going to have a lost year of schooling for a lot of the kids out there? How effective is the schooling going to be for a majority of the students out there?
I mean, we've had, you know, in my lifetime, there's been a couple times that we've had extended periods where we have not had school in the wintertime. I mean, I'm from up north. Blizzard of 78, we were out for 2-3 weeks. I mean, it was a long time.
A lot
of
difference between 2 or 3 weeks and 3 months.
True.
Because now you're looking at March, April, and May. I mean, you're missing a third of the school year.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's luckily with technology, you know, we can keep some of it going, at least with the teachers. I know the parents are having to do it. And
well, I mean, the question is how much of the kids actually doing it? I'm sure there's some small percentage of the kids that have parents that are actively involved in making sure they do things.
Right.
The problem is you've got a big chunk of schools that, oh, here's a packet of things to go work on, and the kids do it in half a day, and they have the rest of the week
off.
Well,
the policy used to be for the NTI days, the, I guess, what do they call it, non-teaching instruction or whatever, that they were not allowed to present any new material. That policy has changed. That was a policy, I guess, in the state of Kentucky. I was talking to a public school teacher about that. And all bets are off on that now. You know, now they are having to present new material so that the kids can progress. But most of the time, yeah, snow days, it was packets. It was just stuff that they already knew how to do. But so we're changing how we're teaching now.
It'll be interesting to see, because I think a lot of that happened in the last week or two, and kids are finishing this stuff in like a day and moving on.
Yeah. Now teachers are learning how to teach in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a process here.
But at the end of the day, this is where you get into the whole private versus public in general. Like, a private school has a very vested interest in trying to keep the education going and doing everything possible.
Yeah.
Because people are paying for it. The public school system, yeah, it'd be good if we can teach them, but what real incentive is there if the education's mediocre?
Yeah.
There's not really a lot there. Then you've got parents who are not engaged in their kids, which is a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
What are those kids doing during all this?
Not much.
Exactly. That's why I'm kind of curious about a lost year.
Last year, yeah.
Now we're talking about 6 and 7 months without really having any schooling, because you're also going to add summer vacation into that mix. How much will they have lost in 6 or 7 months?
Well, and I mean, I'm sure some schools will choose. I assume that some of them, you know, that I haven't heard of any conversations or anything, but starting back in July, you know, and starting school again early to try and make up for what they've missed this spring. But we're just not there yet. It's still, you know, in the beginning stages. We still don't know what's going to happen. So,
again, if you have some percentage of your kids that actually do the schoolwork, which you will have some.
Yeah.
The question is, how big is it? And I have my doubts as to it being more than like 5 or 10% of your population. Yeah. Your school population. Are you going to subject those other 10% to that? Of relearning a bunch of stuff that they already learned?
They'll be way ahead.
Yeah. It's interesting, because you've got almost a half a year of probably education lost. Because the question becomes is what gets retained over that 6 month period? Because if we go from basically March to September, August, without any real learning going on of any significance, how much do you lose?
Yeah.
I know a lot of teachers complain about the summer in general, them losing a lot.
Now, well, that's why a lot of schools are going to the full year school.
Well, interestingly, Shelby County right near us is going away from it.
They're going away from it? Really?
Because it was a pain. Huh. It was a real problem.
Interesting. Okay.
Because you only had like a month or so between each one, and you really didn't, it was hard, childcare and breaks. Now you had 2 week breaks and 3 week breaks rather than 1 week break.
Right.
And that became a real problem for parents.
Sounds like the childcare system needed to beef it up. What Frankfurt apparently does is they have school like during that time, teachers can work during that time basically as childcare.
Yeah.
You know, and if you work one of those, then you get, I don't know, I can't remember how it worked.
But you have a 3 week break that the parents have to figure out something to do rather than a 1 week break.
Yeah.
Where, because in a traditional system like spring break, a lot of the parents will take that week off and go have a vacation somewhere. Yeah. But when you make that 3 weeks, that's no longer the legitimate strategy.
Yeah. Not every boss will let you take off for 3 weeks. Yeah.
And it caused problems with like a lot of summer sports and things, because you know, a sport like swimming, where you're swimming all summer, 5-6 days a week, now all of a sudden you're back in school. So much for swimming at 5, 7 in the morning. You can't do that anymore. You can't swim in the afternoon as easily,
because you're going to meet at school.
It creates some issues. The year-round schooling, unless everybody's on it, it creates issues.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, lots of questions. Lots of uncertainty in the future. And
control what you can control, man. That's the motto.
Control that I'm going to get up in the morning and go running and keep my 6 feet distance from my friends. But I'm going
to
see them.
Try not to lament missing a pool.
The weather's been pretty good. We've gotten to bike a couple times.
Yeah.
That's been good.
If the weather turns, that helps.
Yeah.
That allows me to get on the bike.
It has been. I mean, that definitely, I do miss swimming. That's for sure. As hard as it was, I miss it, but I'm glad to be getting back on the bike. So that's exciting to me.
It is a nice tight break to take. it's nice to take a little bit of a break from coaching.
Yeah.
24. 7. Well, the problem you run into with like Clear Creek Masters is I'm the only coach.
Yeah.
There is no downtime for me.
Yeah.
The downtime is nice. Extended downtime will not be nice. I do miss the swimming part, though.
Yeah.
I do enjoy swimming and learning and that side of it. It is nice to be able to take a break from the coaching side for a few weeks, but that will change.
Yeah.
I do miss coaching the kids, though.
Yeah.
I really like team ball sports. I should have been a ball coach. Should have been a high school coach and moved on to college or something. But
yeah,
that's not a path I chose. I chose IT. That's okay.
Yeah, it's a different life. You know, it's never too late as you find it out.
Yeah, no, we were talking about starting a
timing of
a select soccer team here.
Oh, yeah,
Frankfurt.
That's right.
I don't know if we will or not.
Well, this is all kind of throwing a wrench in everything.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the problem.
I forgot they were talking about that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Frankfurt doesn't have a select soccer team. If you want to play soccer on a more regular basis, you have to go to Lexington and Louisville, which Lexington's a 45-minute drive, 40-minute drive, and Louisville's probably about an hour.
Yeah.
To go to these things. That's a long way to go to practice 3 or 4 days a week.
Yeah.
And why soccer is just inadequate. They used to be able to do like 2 practices a week. Now it's just one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not enough. If you're going to advance and get better in a sport, you need to practice a couple times a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not happening. And while I'm not a big fan of single sport, you do need to, if you are good at a sport, you do need to play it regularly.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be your only sport and you do that 24/7. That's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea for a kid.
But if you're involved in a sport, it's good to play it regularly in season. Like swimming. Swimming's 4 or 5 days a week in the summer when it's in season.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually good for the athlete because that's how they're going to advance. That's how you're going to progress, doing it regularly. Right. Like I said, as long as it's not your only obsession and that's all you do 12 months out of the year, as long as you're playing one or two other sports, it's okay to play one sport regularly in its season.
Yeah.
But
yep.
Well, we'll so I was like, well, maybe we can do that in Frankfurt and I can coach soccer.
We'll have to get through this section first of life. And
hopefully we'll have any sports at all this summer. Ugh. My soccer season was supposed to start this week.
I'm sorry.
I has a sad over that one.
That's very sad.
Volleyball, I feel bad for the kids because they were getting better. And I feel bad for all the collegiate athletes.
Whew, oh, man. God. Oh, that's painful.
That was brutal. A guy dropped a bike off over the weekend, and his son played for Western Kentucky basketball.
Oh.
And they were playing really well at the end of the year, and he thought they could have made the NCAA tournament. And they were, I guess, down in New Orleans for the tournament when they canceled the conference tournaments.
Mm.
Oh, it was wild. There were teams warming up when they canceled it.
Oh, my God.
Because I follow Florida State sports, and they were playing in the ACC tournament. And they were the one seed, so they were playing the morning game, the noon game, on that first or second day, whenever. Because it's usually seeded where the lower seeds play each other, and then the top 4 seeds play in a round of 8.
Okay.
So you eliminate all the other teams until you get to 8. And Florida State was the one seed. They'd won the ACC, so which is like the first time ever. I feel bad for them. They were in line to be a 1 or 2 seed. They were the one seed, so they played in the early game because the games would get later. That would give them the most rest as the tournament advanced.
Gotcha.
And like the higher seed would play later in the night, so they would get less rest as you advance through the tournament. And they were warming up and got called off, and they canceled the tournament. And then gave them like the ACC Conference Championship trophy. Because in basketball, ACC is weird. They don't have... The champion is not the regular season winner. It's actually the tournament winner.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
It's very weird. Became a real problem back in like the 50s and 60s when only one team got into the NCAA tournament.
Oh, wow.
Because it was the tournament winner, not necessarily the conference champion. Huh. And they'd have like a really good team that wouldn't make it because like the second place team would beat them in the tournament.
Oh, jeez.
But that goes way back. Well, since they were the regular season conference champion, they ended up getting the trophy because they canceled the tournament. And so they did this award ceremony there, and it was just kind of bizarre because the kids were kind of like...
I remember seeing a picture of that, and it was like everybody looked really awkward.
Just, yeah, it's like, What kind of celebrate? Okay, I won something. We I'm supposed to be playing basketball right now. What is this?
And we skipped a step here.
And, you know, what kind of excitement can you drum up in that situation?
Yeah.
You can't. You just kind of sit there and be like, oh, I'm thankful. You know, so bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It's the sports world. It's tough.
Yeah. No, it's all going to be, I don't know, everything's going to change. We'll see what comes out in the end. It's like throwing the cards up in the air and see where they land.
And you don't have control over it. That's the part that's
always annoying. No, that's like I said, you're throwing cards up in the air. You don't have any control over where the heck they're going to land or what's going to happen. But
good times.
Good times, yeah. Well, we're going to keep plugging away. We'll be back again next week. Thank you again to our sponsor, 3 Sport Endurance Coaching, even if you don't have a race coming up. But, you know, a lot of people are kind of aimless, don't know what to do right now. Give us a holler. We'll give you some direction. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.